Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 11 with Irish breeder Alan Robertson. Alan has been a good friend of mine for a number of years, and together we own a few horses. Those of you that know him well know that he is a man of few words and usually shies away from the spotlight or the limelight. So I'm very grateful that he agreed to do this interview. He's also a very busy individual. He and his family run H&H Bakery. He has also created and runs Green Gold Equine. And then on top of that, he breeds his horses. You were drawn to breeding animals at a very young age.
Yes.
How old were you when you got your first broodmare, and how did that come about?
I suppose it was when I was 15, maybe 16. Mm-hmm. I suppose I was the usual pony mad child. Loved, got into the sport, got into the game, I suppose. But the very first mare that I bought was a mare called National Clover. And she was a mare I bought from Tom Linda McGee,
okay,
in Portadown. Yeah. And she was in foal to Porsche. And she had a foal equipped by Dutch Treat. So that was my first broodmare. I think you've seen her in the newsletter. It was like always looking at what was for sale in the newsletter. It was kind of an obsession.
And what newsletter?
Newsletter was our local paper. It was kind of like...
There's a classified section.
Yeah. So she was a mare by Clover Hill.
Okay.
And the mother was Middle Temple Menelik, I think.
Nice.
And she was a full sister to Westgate. And Westgate was a horse that Edmund Hickey, I think, had in Switzerland. She jumped Grand Prix. I think she was very good at Puissance. And so that was the first mare. So she had a colt. It was a colt, and a very nice colt at foot, by Dutch Treat, who Carmen bred.
Mm-hmm. Interesting cross with the Orcomena and the Menelik, and the Menelik and the mare.
Yeah, it was a nice combination, and it was horses that I'd been reading off. Obviously, Clover Hill, everybody wanted a Clover Hill mare back then. And so it was really exciting to have that type of mare. So I started with her. I think she had a filly by Porsche. It was a very, very nice filly. I actually sold it as a foal to people in Clare. And then we went on to breed her to Concord. What else? A French stallion called Dracar de Houtin, son of Narcus. That was done through Pamela Miller. So that probably was my first kind of involvement with French self-fancy stallions. And Pamela was very influential in that she made a lot of stallions available or accessible. So it was the first frozen insemination, I think, we did.
Okay. Since then, who are the breeders that have inspired you, both in Ireland and throughout Europe?
I suppose the early days would have to be Jacqueline de Malacy in Normandy. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to her through Pamela, you've mentioned it before. She had a stallion called Galobé du Marais, and I was really interested in him, and actually rang her to Normandy, and she invited me over, and I went over for the French National Championships in Saint-Lô. So that was back, I would have been about 17, 18 probably at that point. Went there, and it just opened my eyes completely to what was available. So I went there as just wide-eyed, not really knowing what to expect, kind of completely, I had no preconceived ideas. And
that was the trip after the Dublin Grand Prix?
Yes. Yeah, I went directly there after the Dublin Grand Prix. Got on, drove to Rosslare, got on as a foot passenger, and she met me the other side. And she was very, very kind and open. It was a great time. I actually went there and I sat up on a couple of horses. I bought my first French horse there. A horse called Dracar de Bully. And he was a six-year-old that Juliana Payard had rode French national championships on. He was by Socrate de Chivry, out of a trotter mare. And he was really nice. So I actually ended up buying him while I was there. Made a phone call home. And I bought him. And they actually asked me to come back as a rider for their stable, which I agreed to. And I went back and spent a good while there. So she had great influence. So she was very... they were small breeders. They probably had about 11, 12 mares. But they'd done their homework. They bought the best mares that were available, mainly Saint-Francais.
Was there much or any focus on dam lines at the time in the same way there was now? Or were they just focused on buying the good individual by a good sire?
No, they were definitely way ahead when it came to dam lines. And I mean, I'd been reading a good wee bit about the famous ones, like at the time Narcus was very prominent.
Hmm.
There were certain lines. Rosier was another one of the National Stud Stallions. But I mean, once I arrived in France, that first trip that I went, I spent 2 days at the French National Championship. So I think the first day it was like 255-year-old stallions in a class. And the way they divided them was they jumped in the category of each stallion. So all the Rosier stallions jumped. Then all the Cachabeda Rui stallions jumped. You know, then it was, so you've seen in a very short space of time, you could see the characteristics of each stallion, what way he was stamping. But also, you could look at the dams, you could see on the page what they were out of.
And it's similar to the Cachabeda stallion.
Yeah, so we were getting a lot of information very quickly, and you could see what they were trying to do and what they were trying to achieve with their bloodlines.
But that was huge as well, because if you were like a breeding obsessed 17, 18 year old,
sure,
to get that exposure at that time, you would have been a long time trying to get that same level of exposure to all those horses and bloodlines from Ireland.
Well, it also made it very real, because I mean, going back to Jacqueline, to the reason why I went in the first instance was to see Galibert du Marais, and I had read a bit about him, and he was out of a very famous mare called Carina du Marais, and she was an Anglo-Arab mare that was by a stallion called Aj A, and I was really interested in that line. He had been breeding horses that were very successful up to 160 and very small crops. It was extraordinary what he was doing, so I was interested in seeing that particular stallion. So it was one thing reading about them, but it brought everything to light, and you could see what they were in reality, the type, the model, how they jumped, how they were in the practice ring, everything that a rider or a breeder would want to see.
It's probably a big advantage at the time, not just the exposure to seeing them, but the fact that you also went there riding, because you got a very complete feel for what was there.
Yeah, but no more so, it was really, it was very nice for them to invite me to be their rider, and but the type of horses that I was being, sat up on, it was amazing to be exposed to so much quality in one place, and they were breeding some of the nicest horses that were there at that time when I was there. It was a great foundation. It was a great foundation to go there as a rider, but actually to sit up on horses and feel what real horses were. And, then looking back even into their production, how they've went on to be very good horses, some instances not. But it was a real eye-opener, and it was a great education, I suppose.
And then how did the purchase from going there, being the rider, how did the purchase of High Jump to Rye
come about? And with that as well, what do you think made High Jump so special as an individual?
Well, the first, that first initial trip I seen High Jump, she was at Jacqueline's yard. She actually had a filly foaled foot by Lycan. I remember to this day, they brought me out to see the brood mares, and they were out in the Marais, as they called it, and it was in a field of Norman cows.
Mm.
And there she was with her filly by Lycan. And I loved her at that moment. And obviously, that was that. I just put it to bed when it came home. Obviously, I'd bought it's the six-year-old, and she'd invited me back to be a rider. So I think 3 or 4 months later, I went back then to be their sort of rider. The filly was weaned at that point, so the Lycan filly. And she'd come back in to be started again. So she had been green broke, put in foal, which was a normal thing there. And she was a big mare. It was the right thing to do for her, probably. And she just started back into work, and I was the first one to get on her. And I knew instantly that I wanted her.
So she got such a good feel under saddle.
Yeah, she was 17-1. I remember that my first thinking was when I sat up on her, after a little while, just the feeling that she gave, you just felt as if you could come down to
anything.
She had a lot of means, and she was a very sensitive mare in a good way, and she reminded me actually of a horse called Pozzitano, the beat man who used to ride, and I just thought, I just have to have her, so to buy her or something, do something to get her bought. So they did, they agreed, and I was able to buy her very early on.
And did you have to do a bit of panic tangling then when you came home, or is that for a different horse?
There was
a bit of a dispersal.
Luckily, before I actually went, I had the horse that Dracar de Boulay had him sold, so I bought him the first trip. Brought him home, did a bit with him, and Joanna Story bought him in Scotland. Went on to be a very nice horse. And she also, I rented my mare, it was a Mill Jim, it was kind of a nightmare, that I'd done Young Riders with. I rented her for the year because I was going to France. Mm. And, her. And I sold another horse that I had at that time, was a horse called Carnival Lord, another Carnival Knight Young Rider horse, he was sold. So kind of with the proceeds, I kind of went and thought, if I see something, it's the next kind of investment. So that was the plan when I went. So I was able to buy her. She was 80,000 French francs, which wasn't a lot. It was equivalent of about 8,000.
And she was three or four?
No, she would have been five. She bred...
Oh, she's put in foal at three.
She was inseminated, broke. She was green broke and put in foal. And then the foal was weaned. And I started to ride her and do a bit with her.
But then you bred her to Quickstar four times in a row.
Yeah, so I suppose, yeah.
And why were you so convinced that Quickstar was the man for her?
It was interesting, I suppose. I going back just a wee bit before that, I suppose... I had to make a decision, first of all, that she was going to be a broodmare. I bought her within 4 or 5 months. I had a lot of people that were interested in buying her. She had a lot of quality. I remember I'd leave to come home to work again here. And I left her with Stephen Lagash, who's another rider in the locality. And he started going to shows, and he brought her to Auvers for her first, I think her first show, her first proper show. And he rang me coming back, and there was three customers. And one of them was Eric Navey. And so I had to kind of go, they were saying, like, you have to sell her because there's a lot of money on the table. And I kind of sat down and had to think about it, because I thought, yes, I need maybe... now's the time, a good time to sell, or maybe we should produce her on or whatever. But I think in my heart I always wanted to be, to have a top mare to breed, and so I made the decision then that we would breed her.
It was a very big call. Again, 17, 18, turn down the money and see the potential in what she could do for you as a broodmare at that age.
Yeah, I suppose I was convinced. And the other thing that had happened at that point, Quickstar had finished in competition. Alan Katz, who owned Horse Import Export, bought him. He was based in Carentan, which is right beside where we were when we were in France. So it was almost like just put on the table. It was kind of going. I had an inkling that that maybe would have been the road it would have went down. And then when I refused money, I just decided that we were, now she was going to be a broodmare. So she was inseminated with Fresh to Quickstar and Vol with twins, which she always did there. And I pinched one, and luckily
you pinched the right one.
Yeah. And he's dead, and was, that was Omega Star, and then he was born 2002. Insemination was 2002, born 2003. And I really liked him. He was a very, it was a perfect cross. So High Jump was Catchabay de Rui. He was a full brother to Calabay de Rui and a half brother to Balabay de Rui. And the dam was then Gilio. And there was Furioso in New Mexico on the dam. And I thought it'd be interesting to line breed on the Galloway, Quickstar. And I remember back then you had to make a contract with the the stud owner. So you had to send the papers of the mare in. And, I thought really nothing more about it. It was brilliant. I was excited that she was going to be inseminated. And they ran to say it wasn't going to happen because it was too close.
On Galloway.
Yeah.
Too closely related.
So I sort of explained that I'd looked at that and was happy enough to continue, and they didn't mind, just go ahead. So I think after a bit they did, which was lucky. So she was inseminated there, then I brought her home, and she had her foal here. She had a colt foal. It was a very, very nice colt foal. So it was a no-brainer to go back to Quickstar again.
And again and again.
And again and again. So it was four, yeah. Quickstar was very lucky for me. He had Omega Star, or had Omega Star with, as a first foal, but it was just the perfect cross. I mean, she was big. Mm. She had all the scope. She had great mind. And then he had that extra blood and really good gallop. And she was French, but she wasn't really French in the way she went. I mean, she had...
And what do you mean by that?
She wasn't on her nose. She was very nice to ride. You know, she's everything that you'd want in a show jumper. I think if she would had went on as a jumper, she could have been something very, very serious. Mm. In the early days, like, I was training with Julien Appaillard and Philippe, his father, and like, he's a very good one, a judge of one, and he really liked her. He really rated her. He wanted to buy her as well. But I just, I suppose, had that whole notion, because I had a couple of broodmares before and we'd done a bit, but I wanted a really serious broodmare. And I'd sort of...
You got it.
...decide it was her.
And just, will you go through the story of the day that Beer Hunter, then her second foal, won in Hickstead, while Omega Star was in Fontainebleau?
Yes, that was 2012, so 8 years ago.
The year of the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so Beer Hunter had, was it Trevor Breen? They had, I think both classes were obviously, I think they were the same day. So I didn't really hear, I knew Beer Hunter had won the Derby, and the Speed Derby, and with Trevor, and I got a call from France, to say that Omega had won the class there. And that was, it was an amazing day, because it was, Quickstar had just died the year previous and they had decided to run a Grand Prix in Fontainebleau the next year and have a prize. It was called the Quickstar Grand Prix. And the first winner of it was a Quickstar.
It's brilliant.
And it was a mega star. So it, that was the same day that Beer Hunter won Speed Derby with Trevor. So it was nice for the mare, and it was nice.
You have a very good talent for picking broodmares, for spotting broodmares. And what's interesting is they're not always, you know, now everybody straight away, they look at the paper, and if there's not a whole ream of meter 60s, they say it's not good enough. And they seem to forget to look at the mare. But I've noticed from going to different farms or seeing the mares that you've bought here, they haven't always been the obvious ones on paper, but more often than not, they produce the goods. And I suppose there's two different things with this is, what do you think are the essential ingredients that those mares need to have that you're drawn to them? Because you're drawn to them before often you know what the pedigree of the family is. And then the second part of that question is, what do you think the difference is between a mare that's going to be, you think is going to be a special broodmare versus a special mare for the sport?
Well, I suppose most of my mares I bought as 2-year-olds when we started them. I would have bought like the Ruloff ones, for example, mm-hmm. which I'm breeding from. They would have been bought as 2-year-olds. So I would have been drawn to, first of all, them as a type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I suppose it was unusual. I prefer to go and see. If I pick out something, I have to like it instantly. And then I look at the paper.
Yeah.
I suppose in recent years, it's got very technical in that we're looking, we're checking horse telex, we're checking hippomundo. You know, you've got so much information at hand. But for me then, it was about going in, maybe being told about something that's interesting, going and having a look, and then going to look at the passport in the kitchen afterwards.
But I've even seen it when we've walked into fields of mares. You're drawn to the proper one in that field before you know how any of them are bred. And I think that's what's quite interesting. Your instant feeling or your gut feeling for the good horse seems very strong before you even know what the pedigree or paper is.
I don't know. I think it's, you just have a feel for something that you can't really explain. You're just drawn to a certain thing. Or, so I remember the day I bought Noriada. I don't think in all the years I've had her, anyone has ever asked me to sell her. Yeah. And now I think she's the granny of my 160 horses.
Yeah, and the mother of 3 Grand Prix horses.
Yeah, we bred a European silver medalist in the event. By Demo. So she was a mare I loved. I bought her from Bert van Nuttler. He was very, very helpful, and he was always very, very good to say, got a nice mare. You know, this is a good horse, and I bought a lot of the mares through him.
But what was it about? She's a perfect example in that she went on then to breed, 3 Grand Prix horses, Chocolate Domino for the eventing. But she was a 15-2 little chestnut mare. She was by DeMiro, but she didn't have a proven dam line. You know, it was
her heart and her, just the metal. She was made of iron. And her breeding would probably suggest that as well. She's by DeMiro, out of Jasper.
Yeah.
Le Mexico, Mexico. It's really hardy breeding. Tough. And she was a tough mare. She was 26. But she's just so much energy and so much heart. And I mean, I think that's really what makes a horse. It's the internal characteristics, those special things that really, you know, we're seeing now in our granddaughter. You know, it's the same type of horse.
You've said on various different occasions, like when you're going out to buy mares, you first buy them good enough for yourself, and if someone else wants to buy them, that's fine, but you're not just buying to flip a mare.
No.
But I think that shows a really interesting example that you bought her and nobody's tried to buy her off you in all the time that you've had her.
No.
And yet she just keeps churning out the performers.
Yeah.
It just shows that so often we're looking at the wrong thing. We're looking at the paperwork, or we're looking at what height she is, or like, you know, that rather than actually taking the time to understand the being that she is, like, she'd go through fire.
Yeah.
You know, she's so...
That's true. I think one and one doesn't always equals two. And I suppose that's probably why we like the game so much. It's not an exact science.
Mm.
It's more a feeling. Trying to observe and see the things that really get you, that makes a horse stand out. And I suppose I've been lucky because I've been exposed to so many good horses early on. And I've been lucky in that, you know, my time even in France, for example, where I could actually just do horses full time for that period. I went and visited the breeders. I seen the mares that were the mothers of the Grand Prix horses.
That's actually a very good point, because I remember Jacques Remenza making that point. Like, he had worked in Zangerscheid, and he had worked maybe in Harm Thormalens in Germany. And he was saying, like, when you actually have that special mare in your hand and you've worked with her, your understanding of what a special horse is or what a good one is just completely changes. Like, it's getting up close and personal with all those special ones just really enhances your ability to see those characteristics in other mares that come along or up for sale.
I think what's really exciting is when you see something very special and you really, really, really like it. Like the filly that I bought most recently. And you see them, whether it's on a WhatsApp video
or in the field.
Or in the field. And you really like them. And then after all that, you go, okay, what's the pedigree and what's the dam line and what's... And then that all comes and you just think, wow, that all makes sense, because she is what her breeding suggests. She looks like her breeding. Or, you know, so it's nice when the jigsaw all comes together.
But then the other part that you've got is not just spotting it, but your determination to get them bought. Be it buying High Jump in 2002, 18 years ago, or buying your most recent filly in 2020. You see it, there's a quick decision that this is something special, and it's to do whatever you need to do to get it bought.
Yeah, I think she's probably the most exciting one that I'm most excited about since High Jump.
And I suppose for those listening, would you mind talking through what that filly is to not leave people in suspense?
So she's come out full from the Rusaka Danley, just from out of a very young mare, but
by Cassander.
Yeah, I'm very excited about her. Mostly of all, I'm really excited for her as a sports horse potentially, but for breeding. I've already, like, I know exactly what stallions I would put on her. She's a year old.
And what, as her as an example, I suppose, just thinking of it from an educational point of view, and when people are trying to find that special filly that could become a foundation mare, using her as the example, what is it about her, aside from, obviously, she's from a dam line that a lot of people are trying to buy into at the moment, but even merely paperwork aside, as an individual, what do you think makes her an exciting broodmare prospect or foundation broodmare?
She reminds me a little bit of Noriada. She's got that blood, real blood, lightness, modern, and she's true to her breeding. I mean, you can see the comme il faut in, you know, the canter, the balance, the sharpness.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a real sports, she's a real sports horse. But also you can see her value as a breed mare because she's so extremely sport and blood and light.
Modern.
And she looks to have kind of this natural carefulness.
Yeah.
And she's so light from the floor. She's phenomenal. But you can imagine putting the power horses to her.
Yeah. You've bought and sold a lot of mares over the years. Some you've bred with yourselves with great success. Lots have gone on to other people and been very successful for them in their breeding program.
Yeah.
Of all the mares that you've sold, are there two or three that, if you had to pick from any of them, are there two or three that you'd love to have back in your own breeding program?
The Altera Queen. She was a Voltaire mare out of Ben Roy, Nanka, I think. And actually, I sat up on her when I was in France. I started her in France. That was a long time ago. That's 2000.
20 years ago.
20 years ago. So, yeah, did a bit with her there. Really liked her. I put a syndicate together. And she had a five-year-old year in France with Julian Payard. And then she came to Ireland as a six-year-old. She did her six-year-old year here. Neil Ferran rode her. She was very exceptional. Not an easy mare. She won in Dublin, six and sevens in Dublin. She won in Lyme. County.
And she won the six and sevens as a six.
Yes. And she was exceptional mare. Again, kind of knew the backbreeding too. I got friendly with the breeder. But she was sold. She was sold to the US Virgin Islands. And Guy kept her in France and produced her more. She went right up to the top with Alexi Gautier. But we actually bought her a half-sister to her. Rowan and I had, Rowan McLaughlin, a mare called Eliwaz de Kempdula. But anyway, long story short, she was definitely one I would have loved to have had as a broodmare.
What would you have brought her to?
I would have put her to Quickstar. She was 17 hands, she had a really good front end. She wasn't the most straightforward. I remember she used to come. Jacqueline also had a herbal company. And we used to use a lot of herbs on that mare to keep her settled. It worked really well.
Like natural cameras.
Natural, yeah. She's a very hormonal mare, but she was an exceptional jumper. So scopy. Neil did a very good job. Ian did a very good job with her. So she was definitely one I would have had back. It's a mare I sold, and she's gone on very good. Gina Kett has her.
Mm, no? The contender mare.
So yeah, so she's a contender. I'd have seen Dan Lenny's Mermis. Mm-hmm. I bought her along with four or five others from Rulox.
Is she the dam of Bombay?
Yeah, she's the mother of Bombay. He's qualified, I think, shortlisted for Tokyo. With Ruth van der Schans.
Mm, she's lovely.
She was a lovely mare. Beautiful type, great model, and all the blood. Like the Rulox. That was the thing that they brought to the table, that thoroughbred blood up close in the pedigree. And, you know, I think it's something maybe that we're losing now. It's very hard to get that thoroughbred right up there. So I'm lucky to have a couple of the real off mares I'm breeding from. But she was an exceptional mare. But she was a very good mare. And the other one would have been maybe Mary Sola Peter Glynn, would be C.
Hmm. Corland.
Yeah, she came in, bought her in foal to Mr. Blue, bred or foaled her down here, foaled him down here rather. And that was colour blue.
Yeah.
He went, I think he jumped 150. Good horse, and she then transpired Birdie.
Yeah, because that's her first foal, Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
He would have only been a foal or a yearling when you bought OPC.
Yeah, so it was very lucky, and the kind of. It kind of evolved. I mean, I bought nice mares, but they weren't all related at that point. And kind of the story evolved as it went. But they were good individuals in their own right, and they were from good mares that had bred well. And plus, you know, even I suppose we are talking back maybe 10, 12, things have evolved. So you know. It's now more easy to get all the information on every single last mare, what they produced.
But now it's turning into a situation where a lot of people are suffering from like the whole analysis paralysis, where they have so much information on all the different databases, and they just kind of cast mares aside so easily because the numbers don't add up on the database.
See, I could never really understand that bit, because it just takes out the whole, you know, why do you do it? I mean, anybody can look at a computer. Where's the fun in that? Much rather go and see, you know, make a trip and go to France, go to Normandy, find out. It's like honing your craft, trying to learn, trying to see what these mares are about, what these families are about. I mean, sure, definitely the paper doesn't lie, so it's important that you have that bit, but it's nothing worse than seeing something that's so well bred, but you can never imagine a saddle even fitting on its back.
But I think in like a good example of a good one being overlooked is our Coraco filly, where she goes into an auction. She's by a young stallion who's well bred, but just hasn't—he's not old enough to have done it.
Yeah.
Out of a very small family that's not a famous family that people aren't chasing. But if you look at out of the small family, the Grand Dame has already produced two Grand Prix horses, unsold in the auction.
Yeah.
You buy it privately, and it has the potential, how it's looking now, to surpass a lot of the horses that come into these auctions with the black type.
Yeah.
Pedigrees.
It has to be about the horse. Yeah. It has to be about the horse in front of you, I think. Well, for me, fashion breeding is, you know, it is, it's lovely to have a nice horse or to have a foal by a particular stallion out of a particular, but if it doesn't match, it doesn't make sense. You know, if it's not a good combination, it's not a good combination. Just because it looks on paper, you have to see the actual mother and, you know, see what suits her, what's her negatives, or what does she need to improve, and, you know, what was she like in the sport, what, you know, there's so many ifs and things that you can.
And then moving on to the stallion end, you started out as a breeder, your time going to Rulofs buying fillies, buying mares, led you to stallion ownership. Is there a stallion past or present during the time that you've been breeding? One that either is alive now or was alive when you started breeding that you would have loved to own, and not just for commercial reasons, just for the love of the horse and what they produced. Is there one stallion that you'd love to own?
I'd love to own for pleasure, that's for sure.
And what is it about for pleasure other than selling, you know, other than straws being worth $3,000 or $4,000 now?
Yeah, when we were buying them at the beginning, it was so much easier. But I really liked him. He wouldn't have suited. I don't think he actually probably wouldn't have suited standing here. And he's definitely for a very specific mare.
Should people hear it knocking because he was chestnut?
Possibly. Probably, yeah. I loved Ercomina.
Mm.
I loved Ercomina. He was one of my first. I think there's certain stallions, certain horses that you kind of learnt of from the beginning, and they've always remained, and he's always been there from the very beginning.
He was one that I was even thinking of, I think, when I was driving here. I had meant to ask you about, because as well as your trip to France at 17, 18, he was one of your first, we'll call it international trips, to go and see a stallion.
Well, I didn't actually see Ercomina.
But you had arranged the visit to go and see him, wasn't it?
No, I went down to Stavies in Kent. Mm. And she had, she had Eden Mal G actually from Bernard, which she'd bought. She had Lars Erko, that would have been worth Rodrigo Soa.
It was an Ercomina mare that you had wanted to see.
Yeah, that was later on, yeah. So it went, I was obsessed with having something by Ercomina. I actually tried Ercomina with High Jump, but it didn't work.
And the original Flander?
And the original Flander, we tried to do an embryo. But it was just unfortunate, it didn't materialise. But that's the way it goes. But it would have been very nice. Those two mares would have been perfect for it.
And what drew you to Ercomina?
I loved Erco Marco. I loved the whole Irish element to it, but he was such a performer in his own right, and his sisters were as well. You know, it was just such a richness to his pedigree, and I just could imagine him on my mares, because I had a couple of mares that really suited, I thought. And I went back, that was National Fever days, I remember James Crawford was there at that time. But she was very, very kind to put up with me for the day and show me around her stock. And I went back several times since. Once was to see in her Ercomina. I think she was interested. She was battle burning the back breeding as well. Mm. Anyway, it didn't didn't materialize.
Isn't it amazing the effect that a breeder giving a young breeder starting off the time and the attention when they take the time to, like, yeah. when they show an interest in what you do by giving the young breeder that attention, it's amazing the long-lasting effect that it can have on that breeder.
There's no question. Those were the kind of formative, just when you start to think and try to form your own views and, you know, the pathway that you want to go down, it's, you know, it's not easy to kind of, to be starting from zero.
Mm.
So any little bit that you can, that these people give, it's precious because it lasts.
Yep.
And, you know, if it hadn't been for Pamela Miller having Galloway de Moray, I might not have, you know, went
got to France.
I wouldn't have met Jacqueline. And
been on a high jump.
There wouldn't have been a time in France. There wouldn't have been maybe a high jump. There wouldn't have been the mega star. So there is always a backstory. And I think it fascinates me just, you know, hearing other breeders and, you know, their kind of...
And the domino effect.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how one thing can just make, you know, a whole new pathway.
Could you see yourself ever getting involved in a thoroughbred game?
Yes. Only too late now, though.
Why?
I don't know. I suppose, you know, the thoroughbred thing is all about type, isn't it? And it's all about pedigree. And, you know, I suppose the fashion thing is always interesting, too, and kind of trying to see what the next big thing is. And it fascinates me. But I suppose the thoroughbred thing is interesting in that it's so, it's a lot quicker.
Mm. You get to see the results,
yeah,
in a much, much shorter,
yeah,
time period.
I suppose with my other work, you know, in the supplement business, I do have a lot of contact with the thoroughbred, more so now than ever in the thoroughbred game. And I always have that wee inkling. Well, I did buy one thoroughbred mare once, but I actually went down the sport horse route. So
Billy Martin?
She was a Queen Leader mare. That was more of a national hunt, but she was...
She that was really, a good buy.
She came out of golf. So. No, Tattersalls. She was Supreme Leader Menelik for Tina Battleburn. Second Dan was the own sister to Hunter Sport.
Like, it was a serious, to go breeding jumpers back then, it was a serious thoroughbred pedigree.
Yeah, it was the proper one, and she could jump herself. She was a jumper. Dad actually bought her for me. It was my 21st birthday present. I had seen her in the, I just had circled it in the paper. And so he made a few things. And she wasn't a very expensive mare. And she was maybe a cast off, but she certainly was an interesting one for breeding jumpers.
What do you consider to be the greatest challenges facing our industry at the moment, especially thinking at it from a breeder perspective? And obviously outside of the current COVID situation.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Are there any things, trends or issues that concern you about the breeding sector?
I think it's an interesting time. It's very fast moving. Things have changed so much in the last 5 years even. You know, it seems that a lot more is about, well, we've had the discussion before. It's getting less about the horse in front of you and more on what's fashion on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in, if you can follow even the auctions, it's incredible. Just it's the same mare lines on repeat. It's the same stallions on repeat. And the younger stallions, the new mare lines aren't really being looked at as much because it's all about these 4 or 5 or 6 lines. And I'm drawn into that too. I mean, having something from the Usha line or having something from Van Paradise line or whichever line it is that you want to have, it's a no-brainer, you know, to buy into that line. But who's making the new lines? And, you know, it's such a long-winded, expensive game. I suppose it is. It takes a lot of time to develop a line. So I can understand it from both sides, but I think it's going to be all about certain mare lines and it's going to be all about certain fashionable stallions of that time. And it's not going to give younger horses the chance to come true.
Yeah.
Like they would have done in the past. You know, if you've seen a really nice stallion at the stallion inspections, that really appealed to you, you wanted to use them. Whereas now you're making a commercial choice.
People are deciding what can I use that'll get into the auction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it has a detrimental effect. And it doesn't help the quality of the horses either. If it's going to be, it's fine to use. And I've got a cornet out there. I have a mare that's suited cornet, not because just to use cornet.
Mm.
Has to be the right combination, I think.
And I think you touched on it a bit in your answer to that, but I was going to ask you next, actually, what were the major changes that you've seen or experienced in terms of how people are breeding horses? So, versus when you started at 15 versus now.
Yeah, like I did do embryo earlier on. It was actually through Equiova. It was a project that was here. You know, so we did do embryo transfer. It was a thing that we did, and I did a few with Larry as well early on. But now it's just common practice. Back then it was...
Yeah, there wouldn't have been too many embryos done when you did one on Calandra.
No, there wasn't. So I suppose that's kind of... And now it's ICSI. I mean, you can buy... I think ICSI's going to be in Ireland soon. You know, you can do it all here. So technology science is incredible how it's all evolved and kind of watch on with amazement. But at the end of the day, it's about the horse in the ring and how good he is.
And do you think that's... Well, I suppose I'm going to answer my own question here in that just even over the last few years, I think that's been one of your successes is that you buy and breed what you like based on your feeling. And I don't feel you're as easily swayed as a lot of other breeders. So you'll use what you feel is right for that mare. And I think that's probably why you consistently breed high standard of horse here, because you go with your feeling rather than going with the noise of the industry and what's hot.
Yeah, I suppose. But I find it, you know, like I think if people trust your judgment, you know, if they come to look or they buy maybe a foal and they come back and buy another foal, you know, they trust your judgment. I think that's, you know, I think you have to believe in it yourself, and how can you expect somebody else to come and buy something that you don't believe in?
Yeah.
And I'm not really, I suppose, in... It's not all about foal sales for me. I don't mind keeping them on to produce or doing them in shares or, you know, doing some interesting things. I don't need to sell them all as young foals. I don't mind. I don't breed that many anyway. So there's not so much pressure. So I'm not looking at what I need to breed for an auction. Hopefully it's good enough to go and do it when it matters.
It's funny when you meet different people throughout the industry. I think a lot of people, a common misconception that you're full-time in horses, but horses are only a side hobby. You have the family bakery, but also you touched on it briefly, and I'd like to go into a bit more detail. You also have your supplement company, and I'm wondering, would you mind going back to discuss how and why Green Gold Equine came to be?
I suppose Green Gold Equine has kind of been a work in progress all my life for a long period of time. I've always had an interest in health, and even going back to those early days in France with Jacqueline, who had a homeopathic business, I was astounded at the soundness of the horses, how they managed their horses, how they fed them particularly. So it's always been there, but I started the company properly 8 years ago and started to formulate products that we thought were interesting for the marketplace. And I suppose I've always been interested in putting products together that are interesting, like for human. That's been something that we've done in our own business, like the family business. It's my goal, it was 40 years. So this all came about through my interest in horse health and trying to find ways, solutions around kind of common problems like gastric ulcers, etc. So been consulting with various scientists and vets, and been put to formulate a number of products, particularly for the thoroughbred industry, more so. And it's been going well, so we're now looking at, I brought out a blood tonic. It's now 3 years on the go. And we're now doing some formulations for other species. And I hope to bring out a syringe now in the next while for non-natural kind of probiotic gastric buffer for sport horse. And so it's always kind of something I've been interested in. Probably spend a lot more time at that now, trying to build it, and so now it's at the stage where I can sort of concentrate on my mares and my breeding again.
Yeah.
The stallions have taken up a lot of time too, so it's hard to do all. And obviously the family business, so it's definitely, the horse end is my hobby.
The side hustle.
Kind of an addiction that's kind of never goes away.
I finish each interview with the same question, and it's, what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone starting off in their breeding program?
Go with your feeling. You know, learn what that is. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I hadn't went and asked questions when I was 16, 17. I wouldn't have. I think it's important to really know what your feeling is and to love it. You know, do it because you love the horses and enjoy it. I think it's important to get to know what you like and to learn what that is. And don't let, you know, your gut instinct and your own feeling override anything. Don't let it be ruled by anything else.
Yeah.
That would be my advice.